This next presentation is an interesting one. Spectrum Reprac, is there a move to VHF in your future? Bill Ammons will be giving this presentation from Micronetics. Over the last 40 years, Bill has been in the broadcast equipment business, designing products for from phono preamps to 126-foot-long stacked antennas. Bill also cut his teeth in broadcasting after getting his first-class license and learning to soothe the bulky GE TT55U transmitter. He is currently the Director of Marketing and Sales for Micronetics Communications. Please welcome Bill Ammons.
Thank you very much. I'm going to do a presentation today on VHF. And we've had a lot of clients ask us, well, if I'm on UHF now and I'm going to VHF, what do I need? We've heard horror stories about VHF. Sometimes it seems like it doesn't work. And a lot of our customers, when they come into the plant and we have an antenna that is ready to ship minus, let's say, a couple radome sections, you know, the customers look at it and going, well, it's a nice looking antenna, but where's the wiring? We find a lot of our customers haven't had a chance really to take a good look at what's up on their tower. And a lot of the guys that put in stuff 10, 15 years ago that retired, newer guys are coming in and all they do is look up and they see, well, the lights are blinking and a low VSWR and everything's happy. So let's take a little look. Okay, maybe there's a move to VHF in your future. So we're gonna look at what worked at the VHF era. And some things worked very, very well. How big is that VHF antenna? Again, a lot of the TV clients have not seen any antennas up close and personal. But working in the antenna industry, of course, oh, that's a 48-foot long beast that's going out the door. And then why does VHF and digital seem to get such a bad rap? There's actually a couple reasons why it has. And then how much effective radiated power is actually reaching your viewers where your viewers are at. And this is actually kind of an extension of what John Shadler was pointing out. There's also new challenges in getting through to your viewers because now the viewers have changed. The idea of having an outdoor antenna stuck on the house that it gets a clear picture is kind of gone. And the other thing that we found works with VHF, and the number one thing, we tell any of our clients that we're working with, elliptical polarization is the best dollars you can spend on antennas. Okay, the good old days of VHF. High band VHF worked very well. My first job in broadcasting actually was putting up TV antennas for a public TV station. We'd go in and we would make sure that our channel was available on their TV system. And a lot of times the VHF channels, the high band channels, let's say from Baltimore, 60, 70 miles away, they work perfectly fine. On the good old days, the VU90 antenna, that was kind of the gold standard. Almost everybody had one. Radio Shack sold those things by the thousands, the hundred thousands. They had a dB or two gain to them on high band, but 30 feet up in the air, they worked. And if you had a station that was transmitting on high band with a 12 bay antenna, and 30 kilowatts plus of transmitter power, that was the norm for low band, 4-6 bays, get that 100 kilowatts. VHF was beachfront property, and it worked. Okay, the most important thing about the era analog is people back 30 years ago knew how to get TV. My grandmother had rabbit ears. She didn't have a driver's license, never drove a car, but she knew if I adjusted the rabbit ears this way, I could get Lawrence Welk. And if I want to get the news on Channel 10, I just am down that way. She knew all about that. Channel 6, well, you got to make them a little bit longer. Grandmother knew how to get reception, and she was engaged at it. Unfortunately, when that channel moved to UHF, all bets were lost. Okay, how big is that antenna? A lot of guys that have your current UHF antennas, other than having some documentation in the file cabinet as what's up there, there's really, a lot of guys don't have any idea how long that is. And the easy way to kind of compute what things are going to be lengthwise, if you take 11803 divided by the frequency of the channel, you're going to get a wavelength. Do a little bit of linear math if you're going to have X number of bays, or say, well, see, I think we're probably going to have 6 or 7 bays. You can get a fairly close idea as to how long that VHF antenna is going to be. You can also do this for UHF. If you're, let's say, on channel 41, and your consultant is saying, you know, I think we're probably going to be down channel 20, 21, and you want a comparable gain, same quick formula. It's pretty easy. Okay, here's some actual VHF pictures close up to get an idea of what you're dealing with a VHF antenna. The antenna that's being loaded on a truck is a top-mounted channel 8 antenna, and it's a three-bay antenna with elliptical polarization. That's about 25 feet long. It weighs, with the Berry section, it weighs about 4,500 pounds. It has a gain, this one's an omnioid, so it has a gain of around 4.5, and you divide out the polarization, so it's about 2.9 or so. And then the other antenna with the radome off, that is a channel 13 antenna that's six bays, that's a top mount. Now that antenna physically is pretty big around, because in VHF high band, if you want to do a omnidirectional antenna, you've got to have a pretty good sized pipe, typically 16, 18 to 20 inches, because the currents flowing around the outside of the pylon have to be basically set up so that there's a good, even current flow. So with an omnidirectional antenna, it's going to be a lot bigger pipe size. Okay, I don't know if you can see the guy standing right there where the red arrow is. That is a channel 3 antenna. This is to give you a scale of what this thing looks like up close. The guy is standing there, he's about 6 foot tall. The aperture of the channel 3 array is about 57 feet, with each of the bays spacing is about 15 5/8 feet. And the actual length of the bat wings, I believe in this one, was about 13 feet. So it's a pretty large antenna. And this is a base of a channel 3 and channel 11 stacked antenna. So the Berry section ends up being 24 inches in diameter. Okay, here's some history that probably, I don't think anybody in this room has seen. This is a brand new UHF side mount slot antenna with a white radome. That is being supported by a now hollowed out channel 5 slotted pylon antenna. And yes, they do at one time had slotted pylons. GE Canada was building them, and they were very popular up north in Canada. Well, when the transition in Canada changed out to mostly UHF, the channel 5 was gutted of the large inner conductor piece of pylon material. It's a copper pipe. And then there was a special mounting section set up to mount the new UHF antenna. But if you look at the slot antenna, you can see a couple arrows. The slots on that antenna are quite long. And if you look, there's a red arrow that there's a tuning plate, and that was to do some final tuning or basically adjustment of the impedance of the slot. And if you look down at the bottom, there's a green arrow, and there's just a band of metal running across the slot. Those are irises, and that actually is how the antenna was tuned for final length. What GE did is they cut these pylons for channel 4 and channel 5, and then they actually just adjusted the pylon tuning by the red arrow sliding those irises in, and then the eyelets on the bottom sliding those up so you get the proper slot length. And actually they did make a channel 2, one model channel 2 antenna that was up in northern Quebec, which has since, I believe, just turned into rust up there. But that was about 6.5 feet in diameter. Okay, this is a more of a normal antenna you might find on VHF. This is an 8-bay channel 9 antenna. It's a side mount. It uses a 3.5 or 3 1/8 input, so it's got a 25 kilowatt input rating to it. It's 48 feet in length. The antenna is actually broken into two sections. It's center fed, so each half is 24 feet. So this antenna could produce an ARP of over 320 kilowatts. You don't run into that kind of power level, unfortunately. And if you look along the antenna itself, you'll see some metal winglets. Those actually form the cardioid directional pattern Okay, let me talk about a little bit of a case of VHF here and kind of look and see what happened and apply some of the things that we've done with VHF to make antennas work real well. One station had gone from 316 kilowatts of analog power down to 9 kilowatts of DTV. Back in the days when they were starting to plan out the transition, the model was that we thought we'd need a lot less ERP to make things work. Well, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But here's a station that was using a 12 bay batwing antenna that used to work beautifully. You know, listener or viewers close in could get it. It went out 70, 80 miles. Cable heads could probably pick it up 100 miles. But boy, we went on with digital, we went to lower power, and the viewers were calling in left and right saying, we're not getting the signal. So what happened? Also, what was still working? Well, viewers with outdoor antennas, pretty much they were getting reception. It didn't matter where they were at. They could be close into the station. The cable and satellite feeds sites, they typically have a high enough gain budget, so if you dropped your transmitter power by a factor of 10 dB, they're still going to have enough signal to give a perfect result. And viewers with indoor antennas that were maybe 10, 15 miles from the station, that maybe were in frame houses or simple brick houses, that doesn't have a lot of building attenuation, things were working fine for them. Now, one thing with ATSC 3.0, the run rule we think is consumption will be everywhere. You're going to have handheld devices, you're going to have reception in cars, people receiving content 24 hours a day in different locations and in different environments. So the best thing we can do now is plan ahead. How do we get the signal to all these different environments? There's a lot of things we cannot do to change the environment that somebody's going to be in. If they're in an office building and the office building has sputtered glass windows, that's an attenuation factor. Broadcasters can't do anything about that. But what we can do is get more signal into impaired locations. So let's take a look at this station that got the reduction in power and see what the problems were. Okay, here's what the problem was, that the old antenna that had been up there working beautifully for many, many years, the knoll that it placed was in the downtown core of the city. Back in its time and back in its place, there were 3, 4, 5, 6 story buildings. They were brick. They had single pane or dual pane glass windows, minimal insulation. Indoor reception was not that big a problem. Well, in the good old analog days, even with that knoll being down at 8% and hitting right over the core of the city, we still had about 2 kilowatts of ERP, and only being a few miles away, it worked. But now we crank down the digital power down to a peak of 9 kilowatts, and now that we're down between 58 watts and 290 watts hitting the core of the downtown. And let's see what's next that's going to make this even worse. VHF reception killers. No outdoor penalty, a reception loss of 20 to 30 dB. New indoor antenna with a loss of 10 dB or more on VHF. Some of the product that's being sold is this ultimate super duper product, maybe at Best Buy or some of these online places. There's no VHF gain. It's actually a loss. And I've looked at a couple of these indoor antennas and they're horrible. New amplified indoor antennas. These things, for the most part, are junk. They have a wideband amplifier. They have a very low intercept point. And all it takes is for somebody to fire up something that's wireless, a cell phone, any number of things, and it wipes out the amplifier and you have a very low IM point. Some of these devices only take a collector or drain current of maybe 6 milliamps, which means basically if you snap your fingers too hard, it creates intermod. Now, we've also got more building density. The newer buildings are better Faraday cages. There's a lot more metal in commercial buildings. On a lot of the new houses, there are metal studs between the rooms. The low-E glass windows that are high efficiency, those are sputtered metal. Those are all beautiful reflectors of signals. I know I live in an energy-efficient house, And I can, with my spectrum analyzer being there, I can barely find a spot in my house that I could get a decent 41 dBU signal, knowing what I know. And I've even taken a small UHF antenna I build up with, I'm figuring probably about 70 dB of gain, started hunting that around and having the spectrum analyzer hunting for looking a signal. It's not there. There's quite a bit of attenuation. Now, as the building density increases, we got another problem. Metal is a reflector. And when you have a linear polarized signal and it reflects against some of these surfaces in the building, you get Faraday rotation. Faraday rotation basically on a linear polarized signal equals dead spots. And dead spots mean the blue screen of death. Also, with digital, since we don't have the ability to kind of hunt the antennas grandma did to get the least amount of snow, you've got a blue screen. And if you keep moving the antenna around, changing this, no, moving that, and still blue screen, you don't know where you're hunting. Adding to that, a lot of people today don't know how to resolve a reception problem. Grandma did because she got used to it. She was actually a lot more technically savvy on how to get a TV signal than a lot of people today. If you hand a millennial a small TV set and an indoor antenna, say go ahead and set it up to get signal, they can't. They don't understand the basic relationships. So when you have a very hard to troubleshoot system like ATSC, and the viewers that really don't know or are not engaged in how to receive the signal, they've got a problem. An additional penalty, you know, omnidirectional is omnidirectional to a point. If you take a bat wing antenna, you've got four maximas at 100%, you've got four minimas that are about 80%. So if you're sitting in a, if the viewer is sitting in a minima area, they've lost another dB. And an ATSC, again, that blue screen of death can, with one dB, that can do it. If you're running a more directional antenna, like a cardioid pattern, then you might have a 4 or 5 dB front to back ratio. Again, the people that are on the back side of the antenna, that's taking away more signal area. So if you combine the where the first null is of that antenna, drop it another 5 dB for the people that are on the back side of the pattern, there's even less signal. So what would we do for this station on VHF? Well, first of all, we know where there's going to be consumption all over where the viewers are at. What we found that works in VHF, and something that the transmitter manufacturers will love to hear, we would like to sell less antenna and have the transmitter manufacturer sell more transmitter. And with the high efficiency transmitters that are coming out, adding another rack or another tray of at VHF is not that expensive. And it's actually a better trade-off rather than trying to go with a higher gain antenna. Well, what we did in this is looked at this particular site and said, okay, here's our 12B antenna in red. We know that the city center or the buildup core is about 5 degrees down. We also looked at the transmitter that the station had available that could run a digital power and ran the math on it and said, okay, the good rule of thumb is this station's got to cover the core area of the city and the suburbs around it. And also there's markets 60, 70, 80 miles out that are close to the radio horizon. So we want the elevation pattern to produce roughly 95% of full field at the radio horizon. And so we took a, basically modeled down a couple different patterns and said, well, a 5-bay antenna pattern out of our TPV-SFM family, that will let them run the transmitter they have. Also, it's going to produce a lot more signal. So let's just see how much and how much this is going to cure. Okay, here's depression angle versus ERP. The current, I guess you can hopefully, yep, can hopefully see that pretty good. The current ERP with the 12-bay antenna at the radio horizon from a 9 kilowatt peak ERP is 8.75 kilowatts. There's a half degree of beam tilt on the current antenna, so they've got 9 kilowatts effective radiated power at that elevation angle. We go down to 3 degrees, we've dropped down to 3.16 kilowatts. We're getting right close to the core of the city at 4.25 degrees down, 475 watts, and then right in the middle of the null, we're at 58 watts. As we come out of the knoll, we get a little bit more of a signal. We end up going into the second knoll at minus 10 degrees. It has 15 watts of ERP, effectively. So we then compare to the new antenna, the new 5-bay antenna, at the radio horizon, because we've pushed the beam tilt over a little bit more. We're actually losing about 0.34 dB at the horizon, but again, at the horizon, you're basically looking at satellite feeds, far fringe coverage, which is only a percent or two of your viewers in most cases. It's not going to make any difference. At a half degree, a beam tilt where you were at before with the old antenna, the new antenna is, again, a quarter dB less signal. So we're pretty good. But as we get down closer into the core of the city, there's where we start to see some signal pickup. 3 degrees down, 3.16 kilowatts was the 12-bay antenna's effective ERP. The new antenna is 8.8 kilowatts. That's 4.5 dB of difference. As you get down into the core of the city, let's bore down to minus 5.25 degrees down, right in the core. We were at 58 watts. We're now at 6.92 kilowatts. So we've gained almost 21 dB of signal at that location. As you go a little bit farther, closer into the core, we picked up another 13 dB at 6.25 degrees down, and 8 degrees down, we picked up about 8.5 dB. And where the second knoll was at minus 10 degrees, we went from 15 watts to 1.4 kilowatts, or about a 20 dB increase. So that's going to make a big difference. Now there's another way we can look at this from a, instead of just having the chart sitting up here, let's look at this way and we'll wrap it. Here is a graph of ERP in watts. The top is 10,000 watts. The red antenna is the current 12-bay antenna. The new 5-bay is the blue. And you can get an idea that the distribution of signal over the viewing area, which is from 0 degrees down to minus 90 degrees, there's a lot better fill, and we're especially interested in the area between 0 and minus 10. You can see there's a lot more signal that's getting in, or augering in closer to your viewers. So we'll do something else. We'll go ahead, and we're going to basically zoom that in a little bit to give you a closer look. This graph is from 6 degrees above the horizon to 12 degrees below the horizon. As you can see, we've got at least 1,000 watts of ERP anywhere from 0 to minus 10 degrees, which is just about a mile from the transmitter. So we got a nice broad coverage, and you can see the knoll at between 4 and 6 degrees down. As it dips down below 100 watts, the bottom of that's 58 watts. So there's a lot more signal, and again, this is a log plot here. So we cover a lot better. It's going to be obviously a smaller antenna. It's going to require a little bit more transmitter power, but in this case, they had enough transmitter power available with their current system to make everything work. So now that we've got that, we filled in the city extremely well. A lot of the viewer complaints are going to go away. It's not going to be perfectly working, but what are we going to do next to do it even better? Elliptical polarization. If you call us up for an antenna and say, I want a VHF antenna, you're going to hear a pre-recorded voice saying, the best dollar value going is elliptical polarization on VHF. We have found that out where I would say 95% of our VHF antennas going out the door are elliptical, because I tell customers, put elliptical on. It works. There's nothing else like it. We've got a couple patents in the area to make things a little bit more efficient. But the big thing is the basic design behind these antennas, and we're going to talk about just slotted antennas today because we've only got 45 minutes. If the antenna, with a slotted antenna, if your slots are vertical, they're typically one wavelength apart. The slots are about 1/8 of a wavelength. And what ends up happening is the electrical fields going cutting across them, they begin to oscillate in that slot. The fields come together from the slots to form your elevation pattern. And the one that's on the left is basically a depiction, very simple depiction of a slot antenna. And there's really not much difference in them. There's some other variations. Again, this is not Antenna Engineering 501, so I'm going to give you the close field. But for elliptical polarization, what we do is we put polarizers in front of each of the slots. The polarizers are set up. They're about an eighth of a wavelength each. They're set up so that they basically launch a vertically polarized electromagnetic field about one-fourth of a cycle or 90 degrees later than its horizontal field. And that is in quadrature, if it's done properly. The axial ratio, if it's an equal amount of vertical and horizontal, from how we position these polarizers and how long we make them, we get circular polarization, so we get equal amounts of energy in both the horizontal and vertical plane, doing a right-hand rotation 90 degrees apart. For DTV broadcasts, I think most of the people in the industry have agreed that a 70-30 ratio is about the ideal from a standpoint of how much transmitter power versus how much gain or reception that you get from it. The feedback or ride reports from our customers is with elliptical VHF, it seems to work beautifully with 70-30. And at the end of the day, if you don't have enough transmitter power, you know, we run up the gain budget and how much antenna we can stack on your tower. If we can put in even 10% of vertical field, that's going to help some. It's better than nothing. And this is true for both VHF and UHF. Now, elliptically polarized antennas, something that is very important to look at, especially with digital. Digital wants a good time delay flat signal in both planes, both the vertical and horizontal. One of the things that has happened is some of the older designs, the Q of the polarizers gets higher in the vertical planes, hence you don't have a good balance of group delay between the horizontal and the vertical planes. In the analog days, it didn't matter that much. In digital, and especially I think with ATSC 3.0, you're going to want as much linearity in the antenna as possible. Also, the one thing about polarizers, some questions about those. You know, people call up and say, well, you know, they're thinking they're very large structures, they're going to add hundreds of pounds of weight to the antenna. On a slot antenna, a polarizer over, let's say, a six-bay VHF antenna, the polarizer elements itself may add 20 pounds to the antenna. As far as the radome diameter, it depends on the azimuth pattern and also the environmental rating of the antenna. We would use a smaller radome for an antenna located in Florida versus one we would ship up to Wausau that's probably going to get coated with ice. So it would be a little bit bigger and heavier antenna up here, maybe 400 or 500 pounds with a bigger radome system, but down in the south, not many pounds. Now, what is Faraday rotation? This is something that we see with VHF, and this is the biggest problem. Faraday rotation is when you have a linear polarized signal and it bounces off any kind of metallic surface, terrain, moving vehicles. In my neck of the woods in Phoenix, airplanes coming in, and that can change the signal strength up to 20 dB with regards to a fixed polarization antenna. Okay. Here's another way of looking at Faraday rotation impairment, just a little quick modeling here. We went back to the old channel antenna, 12-bay antenna, and we put down the current ERPs. Then we said, okay, what if you had a Faraday rotation impairment? We just took 15 dB and saying, okay, this is an average impairment. What would be our effective power to that horizontally polarized antenna when there's some Faraday rotation impairments? And we went back at the horizon, we were down to 277 watts. So if you have Faraday rotation impairments, it's seeming like you've lost 15 dB of signal or ERP. And we go back down to the core of the city, and we were at between 16.7 to 11.27 watts, and at the null point, we were down to 1.83 watts. There just wasn't that much signal after it's bounced off something and hits a linear polarized receiving antenna. There just wasn't much left. So those are the penalties there, plus the penalties that we talked about of having the more metallic buildings, having indoor antenna impairments. Then you have a bunch of other things, and you can lose quite a bit of signal that way. As far as how much power it takes, additionally transmitter power, if we're running 70-30 polarization split, multiply the transmitter power needed by 1.428, and you'll get your transmitter power needed. Again, it's all fairly simple math. This is on our website, so if you want to take a little bit more look and have a little fun with it. And then we did something else. We said, okay, we're then going to compare the five-bay new antenna, and we're going to look at the ERP both in the horizontal plane and also the ERP in the vertical plane. And then we're also going to say, well, now let's take the 12-bay impaired ERP, effective ERP that we were getting on the old 12-bay antenna, linear polarized. We go back and look at the net amount of signal that's going to be expected to be received at those points, and it runs between 10 up to 32 dB more signal, so you don't have that impairment. It's quite a bit of signal. On the plus side, if you have tower loading issues, we may have just saved you 3,000 or 4,000 pounds of tower loading, because that 5-bay antenna is going to be a lot shorter and a lot lighter. Could we do better at this site? What else could we do? Well, the 5-bay is kind of the limits of returns. You've squeezed all the lemon juice out of the lemon except for a little bit that's left. Let's push it ahead a little bit more. We could do maybe a 3-bay antenna, but then you're popping up the transmitter power to about 4.2 kilowatts. That's quite a bit of change. And quite frankly, the signal strength difference over the core of the city, in this case, 1/10 of a dB, doesn't make much difference. But if you are in a site that has a really high transmitting location, let's say Farnsworth Peak, Mount Wilson, Sandia Crest, where you've got an antenna that's looking down at population, you have a population that's close in but 10 or 15 degrees down, that makes a big difference. A very low gain, elliptically polarized antenna works. And if you're in a large city in the middle of it, same thing, having a low gain antenna, elliptically polarized, you cover like a wet blanket a lot more people that are close in. There's other sites we can add in. Denver's kind of a high site, Boise, El Paso, all these sites you have people that are fairly close in and fairly down in depression angles. You know, the olden days, basically everybody was from about a half degree to about 4 or 5 degrees down, and after that, we didn't really seem to care very much. Okay, quick summary. Rule one is elliptical polarization always in VHF. It doesn't matter what location you're at. Elliptical works so much better, and with new handheld devices, ATSC 3.0, we tell our customers, I said, spend the extra money, and you'll really like us, and we get some very good reports back. Lower gain antennas are the way to go. The old model of the 12-bay antenna and 35 kilowatts of transmitter, unfortunately, they've gone the way of grandma. That's a model that doesn't work anymore. Again, we've got listeners, data consumers that are going to be everywhere. They're going to be moving. There's a lot of opportunities out there that probably be discussed here 4 or 5 years from now, things that we're not even haven't been invented yet. And work with your RF consultant and antenna supplier for the best solution. Antennas are not something that just comes off an assembly line. They're almost like a shoe that for a particular market or a particular channel, we wanted to get the right size, get the right pattern, and something that really works. You know, we can move elevation patterns, we can do a number of things to improve the reception. So as far as us being a supplier, yes, we've got big ears to listen for it. And there's one more thing that's really important with antenna technology. Make sure your antenna, and this is very important, is color approved. Now, I don't know that much about the approval process, but every once in a while when we're getting ready to ship something, this little guy comes in, dapper little hat comes over, looks at the crate. Yeah, looks good. Takes out a stamp pad and stamps it. It always seems to work. So, I don't know who Color is, but they, I don't know if you guys have ever met them, but well. Anyway, thanks much. If you have any questions, please let me know. This is on our website, along with many other impractical and practical ideas for antenna technology. We have a repacking guide that's 71 pages. It has basically a master's level of information on antennas and antenna technology. And if you have particular questions about antennas, give us a call. We do a newsletter every couple months, and we love ideas. If somebody wants us to come up with something, we'd be glad to do it. So thanks. If there's any questions. Well, I guess you all passed with an A.